Hello, I'm Jerry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio for Boxing Day 2020. And I was thinking to myself, how hard do I want to work through Christmas to do this show on the 26th? Boxing Day. I mean, it's the 26th of December. It's the day that you go back over your gifts and remember what you got. It's not like you have to have gifts, but it's kind of nice to have something in a stocking, you know, some bar of chocolate, bottle of wine. And then I started to look in the archives of Tasting Room Radio set up by Corey Wood, and there was December 30, 2017. I was halfway through my visit to New Zealand. Part one was a drive around and a walk around through the wineries in and around Auckland and Waiheke Island. Got on a plane, ended up in Hawke's Bay, spent some time there. We knew we were going to head for Marlborough, just didn't know when. Our guests will include the winemakers at Elephant Hill and Pask. Gimlet Gravels comes into play here, friends. We go to the legendary Trinity Hill and the organic Seleni Estates. And then on to Mission Estate in Hawke's Bay, Tia Maria and Richmond Plains. And we finish with Karenza Johnson, the secretary for the Maui Nation on the South Island. Mike Brown, the winemaker from the Maori-owned Kono Winery. And we finish on board the vessel, the Hikaboo Hunter. And the captain, Dave Higgins, who pulls these mussels out of the water, and we cook them on the back of the boat and pour Sable Blanc from Kono to wash them down. What a couple of days we spent in New Zealand. Please join us. If you've never been there, I think you'll get a sense of the place. If you've been there, just remember what it was like. Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery, the picturesque 50-acre estate winery in the beautiful Cowichan Valley, with a microclimate that allows them to grow seven different varietals, ranging from fruity whites to full-bodied reds. Enrico Winery, just 45 minutes north of Victoria in the Cowichan Valley. And to really get connected, sign up for their newsletter. Just head for their website, EnricoWinery.com. And from everyone at Enrico Winery, Happy New Year.
Vince Labatt is the marketing and sales manager, and John Pete is the viticulturalist for Elephant Hill. And we have come to Hawke's Bay. First of all, welcome to the show. Second thing is, where are we, John?
We're on the east coast of the North Island of New Zealand, just outside Hastings on the coast, right on the coastline at a place called Tiawonga.
What is the challenge here with the wines being grown and the profile that you're attaining?
I'd imagine the challenge would be the multitude of varieties, the multitude of soil types that we grow on, climatically very different to Marlborough. Much warmer, hotter during the summer, more of a Mediterranean style climate, which lends itself much more to reds, to dry red wines, but also to rich, luscious Chardonnays, for instance.
We do full-bodied reds and Chardonnay. That's our calling card, and that's what we're famous for. But what is very exciting is where Syrah is coming in, where we see a huge opportunity. And it's a cooler climate. It's more of a Northern Rhone, Côte Roti style than the Barossa or McLaren Vale in Australia. And because of the focus has always been on Bordeaux varieties, it's only now that we're seeing the real possibility of this variety really taking off. Very exciting. And Elephant Hill is very committed and see a huge opportunity for Syrah.
The soils in this area historically are what we call alluvial in nature. They come from the rivers that flow through the area.
He's John Pete. He's the viticulturalist at Elephant Hill, and Vince Labatt is the marketing and sales guy. Vince, tell me about your neighbors. Let's give a sense of who's in this area so that people understand.
Sure, no problem, Terry. Next door to us, we have the Craggy Range Kidnappers Vineyard. Further on from that, we have Clearview, who are quite famous for Chardonnay. We have Beach House, which is a small, very small family-owned winery. Trinity Hill, Villa Maria, Te Awa, Craggy Range again, Te Mata. So that's where we are.
John, you want to take on the description of the gravels, the Gimlet Gravels?
The Gimlet Gravels is quite unique in New Zealand in that they're very young soils, only 100 or so years old, the result of a very, very large cyclone flood event. Laid down a very thick layer of gravel. Very little actual sort of soil content, lenses of silt that run through it, and that lends itself to a very distinctive way of growing. A lot of heat retention.
It was a riverbed, right?
It was a riverbed, yep. Only 100 odd years ago, when the river flowed straight through it, and a cyclone came through, 200-300 millimeters of rain in a very short period of time, completely diverted the course of the river. It's a fascinating story of what was left behind. Only 20 years ago, the land was worthless. It was actually used as a racetrack.
Yeah.
Now, it's probably one of, if not the most expensive real estate in New Zealand.
It's gold.
Absolutely. Yeah. In terms of viticulture, it's unique, which is why it's starting to be branded as such.
By the way, we're doing this interview in a smashing restaurant at Elephant Hill. They were the 2012 finalist in Cuisine Magazine's New Zealand Restaurant of the Year. Is there a name for the restaurant? I'm looking at you, John.
Elephant Hill Restaurant, basically.
Okay, fine. Your winemaker is Steve Skinner, who remarkably, you wouldn't understand this, but the audience will, looks a lot like Gord Downie from The Tragically Hip. Steve Skinner looks like he could be Gord Downie. I just want to let you know that. I'll put his picture on the website so you understand. John Peet, the viticulturalist, and Vince Labatt, who's the marketing and sales manager for Elephant Hill in Hawke's Bay. And how did you set up the portfolio? In other words, we start with a Sauv Blanc, correct?
That's right. So we have an estate level where our core wines are Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay in the white varieties, and then Syrah and our Bordeaux blends in the reds. So in New Zealand terms, they start off at $20 and go up to $34 for the Syrah. That's at estate level. And then we then make a reserve tier wines only if the quality of the wine is up to it.
A nice Chardonnay.
That's right. So Chardonnay and Syrah, very much so, and then Bordeaux blends. And we think we can make a really interesting, exciting Tival-style rosé.
We're at Elephant Hill in Hawke's Bay, and we're going to talk sustainability for just a moment. For some of the wineries that I'm talking to, it's a big deal. I'm getting a sense that maybe it's not near as important, that you're working on other things. You're a new winery. You're trying to establish yourself. Where are we with that?
In actual fact, we think sustainability is hugely important, but we also think that sustainability has many different descriptions, and to each particular winery means a different thing. So for us, it is hugely important, and we do have a program of sustainability which goes not only through viticulture but also the winemaking, and also the business itself. Is the business sustainable? Yep. So that is a huge part of what we do.
For us to sustain that business, we have to sustain the character of those vineyards. We can't do something for 1 year that produces fantastic fruit for 1 year but then destroys the vineyard forever and a day.
What's the last big subject you guys had that you talked about? What was the one big thing about New Zealand or New Zealand wine that everybody was talking about?
What makes us different from our competitors in the rest of the world? We're small. We know that. We're small, but we're unique. We have a cool, what's called a cool climate that we grow in here, and we're right next door to a very big cousin in Australia. Huge, immense climatic differences between the two, and that leads to very distinctive flavors in the wine. Cool climate equals flavorsome wine. We don't have high alcohol wines, we don't have overripe wines, but we have incredibly fruit-driven, flavor-driven wines.
If someone's living in Alberta or British Columbia, not yet there, if they get in touch with you, can they get their hands on the wine?
Yes, they can, Terry. We are able to ship wines overseas, and we do that regularly. Obviously, far more goes to Australia than goes to Canada, just because of the geographic proximity of it. But absolutely, there's no problems at all.
What's your website?
Elephanthill.co.nz.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Tim.
Thank you for dinner. Thank you for the tasting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hawke's Bay. They are John Peet, the viticulturalist, and Vince Labatt, who's the marketing and sales manager for Elephant Hill in Hawke's Bay. And we're off. Here we go.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
It's Wednesday the 19th of March, and I have found myself at the holy grail of winemaking, certainly in this area and perhaps in all of New Zealand, called Gimlet Gravels. And we're going to find out the whole story in just a moment. We made a right turn at the sign that said Pask, which is where Chris Pask literally started this whole Gimlet's Gravel gold rush. And we'll get that story for you as well. Joining me here in the studio, which is a picnic bench, Danny Van Selm, vineyard manager. He says he's going to be civil, and he has his coffee. So, I mean, that makes sense. And Greg Allison, who's the direct sales and marketing manager. Well, gents, where am I? If our audience is looking at a map of New Zealand, where am I?
Hawke's Bay. If you're looking at the North Island of New Zealand, we are on the East Coast, probably about halfway down. And you've got a lovely big arc, which really, that's what you're going to be looking for. And that's Hawke's Bay. And Gimlet Gravels, so what, we're about 20K from the sea.
Greg, give me Chris's story that leads to what we're surrounded by now.
So Chris is considered to be the founding father of viticulture in this area. He first put vines down in this vineyard back in 1981. And prior to that, he had a small vineyard holding for personal use. And at the time, he was a top dressing pilot, and he was flying over this area on a daily basis. Now, back then, this area was not being used for much. The farmers weren't doing too much with it. There was a drag strip, a racing strip. There was a rubbish dump, and a shooting range for the army, which they still have. Yeah, you couldn't really give the land away. It wasn't much use for anything else. And
because it was an old riverbed.
Correct. Sorry. Yes. So it's an old riverbed. The local river, the Naharoro River, used to flow through here. And about the 1850s, it shifted course after a huge flood. It never went back to its original run. So that's exposed the riverbed, the alluvial deposits. So as a result, this land is very free draining, very low in nutrient status. Hence why the farmers weren't really doing too much down here. So Chris, from his vantage point on a daily basis, thought that actually this land is prime for viticulture. And so started really looking into it. And it was found that with the soil type and the microclimate, it was very similar to Bordeaux, France. And Chris was a big Bordeaux fan anyway. So he took the decision to buy some land, and he started planting Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot for the most part. And since then, more and more people started recognizing the quality of the fruit that was coming out of Chris's vineyards. We won accolades around the world with it, and made people realize that, you know, Hawke's Bay could actually produce some good, solid red wine. So yeah, it's got a lot of draw. A lot of people want to be here.
He is Greg Allinson, and he's a direct sales and marketing manager for CJ Pask, now called Pask Winery. To my left, Danny Van Selm is the vineyard manager. And so back to you, Greg. To be able to put Gimlet Gravel on your label, on a label, what's the value of that these days?
It means a lot. I think worldwide, Gimlet Gravels as a region is widely recognized. Gimlet Gravels was always mentioned in the same breath as Hawke's Bay.
Okay, Greg, last question to you. How about Canadian releases? What's available in Canada?
Yeah, Canada's actually a good export market for us. So we're represented in Ontario, in Quebec, in Winnipeg, Newfoundland, Nova Scotia. We're working on Vancouver.
Could you?
We will.
And what do you think you'd bring if you had an opportunity to leave stuff on the shelves?
Chardonnay, yeah. The Bordeaux blends, and the Syrah. I think they are the flagship wines for this area, and we need to be telling more and more people about them.
Danny Van Selm, who is a legend. He's the vineyard manager for Pask. And Greg Allinson is the direct sales and marketing gentleman. And thank you for the coffee this morning. Appreciate it.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery, the picturesque 50-acre estate winery in the beautiful Cowichan Valley, with a microclimate that allows them to grow 7 different varietals, ranging from fruity whites to full-bodied reds. Enrico Winery, just 45 minutes north of Victoria in the Cowichan Valley. And to really get connected, sign up for their newsletter. Just head for their website, EnricoWinery.com. And from everyone at Enrico Winery, Happy New Year. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who would like to announce that Black Swift Vineyards has opened The Nest. Their tasting room is open on a first-come, first-served basis, no booking required, currently accepting groups of up to 6 people in accordance with good response guidelines. They have a wonderful patio and a picnic area you can often find on site, Grumpy Chef, Little Tokyo Ramen, and their very own Smoke Show, smoked meats barbecue food truck on the site. BlackSwiftVineyards.com and TheHatchWines.com. And from all of the worker bees at The Hatch, have a safe and happy new year. We've just started part 2 of our tour of New Zealand and their sustainable wineries. Up ahead, Mission Estate, Temania, Richmond Plains, and the Maori-owned, operated winery that's so successful called Kono. Right now, we head for the very famous Trinity Hill and Seleni Estates. We're going to meet and talk to the winemaker at Trinity Hill, Warren Gibson, and at Seleni, Grant Edmonds, the chief winemaker, and the mother of twins, winemaker Rachel Garnham. First, Warren Gibson.
What distinctive characteristics can we look for then and now from Hawke's Bay?
I think in general, not that I've worked in a lot of other parts of New Zealand, but certainly made wine from other parts of New Zealand one way or another. I think the natural balance is particularly good in terms of we don't need to make many additions and changes that you might in a warm climate or a very cool climate.
Let the fruit be the fruit.
Yeah, the fruit and the acidity is very naturally balanced and the flavours are generally ripe in most years. And even you've just tasted some 2012 wines, which was a very, very cool and quite wet season. You can see that even in the more challenging seasons, we can still make extremely good wine.
So it's a very good point, Warren. It's a very good point. So Trinity Hill, its place in the world of wine, in New Zealand and the rest of the world. What do you think that is?
In general, New Zealand's still an evolving country. We are in a part of New Zealand where, whilst we have a fantastic varietal mix, the global, in my opinion, the global view of New Zealand is more about Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir. But the wines that are, I guess we're really well known for, which is the Syrah and Chardonnay and the Merlot Cabernet style, I think there's still work to be done in the market. Certainly wine style and wine quality wise, there's some work to be done. But we believe in our quality. I think more from a marketing point of view, there's a lot more needed to be done to tell people about those wines and get them in the glass and get them to understand that we are, you know, a very important sub-region of New Zealand. So
it's a tricky dance, isn't it? Because you don't want to scare them away from the Sauv Blanc romance, but you do want to lure them. Come on over here. Just try this.
Yeah, and we're one of the few Hawke's Bay wineries that believes 100% in Hawke's Bay, so we don't make a drop of wine from outside of the region. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, some of our vineyards where we grow Sauvignon and Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, have climates quite similar to parts of the South Island or Martinborough. So we actually have Hawke's Bay is such a broad region that it might be, from a marketing point of view, too early to sub-regionalise it. But in reality, we can make a lot of those cooler climate styles in our region. It's just perhaps people would think that Hawke's Bay isn't necessarily known for Sauvignon or Pinot. And in general, I don't think there's been enough runs on the board from a number of wineries to give people that impression. So that's our opportunity and our want and need to make great Pinot Noir from Hawke's Bay and great Sauvignon from Hawke's Bay.
And finally, what happens if North America, Canada, and especially the United States embraces your wines and wants more and more and more? There's only so much gravel out there to go around. How might you handle that?
From a Trinity Hill point of view, I think we have 40 hectares of the gravel, and I think at the moment we're a little bit fragmented with our varietal mix, so we have some ability to remove some varieties that haven't been necessarily what we'd feel as successful as we'd like. So we, 40 hectares at, moderate yields is still a reasonable amount of wine in terms of if you're cropping at, say, 6 tonne a hectare or up to 8 tonne a hectare, that's still quite a few cases of wine. So we've got a bit of work to do before we'd be in a situation where we'd be uncomfortable with the volume, I would say. So we need to sell more higher-priced wine that is extremely good. So that's our goal. But we can't just jump to that. We have to work from a small base and take the volumes up. But 40 hectares is still a reasonable volume.
So what's your Twitter handle?
It's at Trinity Hill Wine.
And what's the website? You know the website while we're there?
TrinityHill.com, yeah.
Warren Gibson, the winemaker, very busy winemaker, who's going to go straight out the door at Trinity Hill, Hawke's Bay, New Zealand, as we move down island. Next up, Cellini Estates.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
This is our extended tour through New Zealand. We're in Hawke's Bay, my friends. There's a map of New Zealand on the website, and you can follow along on this tour. Cellini, S-I-L-E-N-I. Cellini Estates is smack dab in the middle of the action at Hawke's Bay. Grant Edmonds is the chief winemaker. And sitting beside him at a very special appearance from Rachel Garnham, who is the senior winemaker. However, she's currently not the senior winemaker. She's the mother of twins. Is it possible to describe how much your life has changed?
Changed massively. I had no idea how much work twins would be. I actually rang Grant after 3.5 months and said, I need a holiday. Can I come back to work, please? So, yeah, that's been great to have that option to come back part-time and to have that balance is wonderful.
It's a nice harvest you've got going there. Grant, it's been sort of imprinted on us as to what a New Zealand Sauv Blanc is going to be, right?
That's exactly right. For a lot of us, particularly winemakers in the business, Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc is, I guess it's not necessarily our first choice of drink, wonderful though it is. The Hawke's Bay style, softer, riper, fatter, richer, easier to blend with food, and we tend to like that style a little more. And so I just got into big trouble with New Zealand wine growers.
How about sustainability? Is it a priority?
It is, and has been from day one when we started this operation here. So the vineyards were planted with a view to getting sustainable registration as soon as they came into production, and likewise the winery, basically within a year of being established, was a sustainable site.
How does it show itself? I mean, what do you do? I mean, I realize it involves water, it involves recycling, it involves your own vehicles.
All of the above. It's actually good that Rachel's here, because she was kind of in control of what a lot of what we did in terms of sustainability. But everything from moving from gas-guzzling petrol-powered vehicles to high-efficiency diesel vehicles, reducing energy costs within the winery, putting in variable speed drives on the compressors, changing the thermostat set points, you name it, we do it.
How does it show itself in the wines? Or does it?
I'm not actually sure it does show in the wines. It's nothing specific that we do, although it is, in terms of vineyard management, it really is all about minimal input viticulture.
Anything unique to this area? Any varietal, any certain...
I think not so much unique to the area, but I think, as I mentioned before, Merlot works incredibly well on these soils, but we're also finding Syrah works really well here.
It's going to be the next big push, isn't it, do you think?
One of the issues is the volume. So there aren't huge volumes of Syrah. So it is very good. Most of the New Zealand Syrah is grown here in Hawke's Bay. But, yeah, there's not a huge volume. So it's going to be hard to push it internationally.
Does Hawke's Bay have to have a varietal of its own, like Marlborough and Sauv Blanc? Does it have to do that? I know you've had this discussion. I know that. What's the thinking?
The difficulty is that we grow so many varieties really well here. I mean, we talked about Chardonnay before. Chardonnay from Hawke's Bay is outstanding. We do really well with Merlot. So it makes it quite hard to promote the region, because, like, well, we're really good at this and this and this. It's easier to tell the Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc story.
As a region, we've talked this one to death and really haven't come up with an answer. So I think the push over the next few years is going to be a sub-regional story about what works best within certain smaller areas within Hawke's Bay.
We're at Cellini, S-I-L-E-N-I, Cellini Estates, and Grant Edmonds is the chief winemaker, and Rachel Garnham, who is the senior winemaker, but currently on leave, mat leave. So for Cellini, if you had to only make one wine, what would it be?
Merlot.
Good on you. We're at Hawke's Bay, New Zealand. This is the first ever tour for Tasting Room Radio in New Zealand. And we're at Cellini. Grant Edmonds and Rachel Garnham are joining me, winemakers. Grant, where are you finding your fruit these days?
We cover the range, really. We're sort of into the foothills, into some of the cooler sites, through the heat of the central river valley, if you like, but also quite interesting stuff coming off coastal vineyards.
The whites?
Whites and Pinot Noir, wow. Coastally, yeah. Because we're finding the sea breeze is just keeping it a little cooler out there.
Anything out of Marlborough?
A lot out of Marlborough. Although we're a Hawke's Bay-based company, two-thirds of our production is Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
So what's Marlborough give you?
We're an export-focused winery as well, and so over 90% of what we're making is exported, and we didn't start off making Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc, but the market came to us and said, we would like a Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. So it's that typical New Zealand flavours that we were talking about before. But made in the Cellini style, where, again, we are going for more tropical fruit flavours rather than the grassy, herbaceous characters for our Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. We also blend it with a bit of Hawke's Bay Semillon too, for a point of difference.
Semillon?
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I love Semillon.
I'm crazy about Semillon.
We also make a varietal Semillon, and of course, Semillon's great for dessert wines too.
Oh, joy. you have a website?
Yes, we do. www.sileni, sileni.co.nz.
And good luck with the kids. Is a boy and a girl?
A boy and a girl.
And here's the thing. It was your own fellow worker who impregnated her and took her home.
He has paid for it in beer.
And we'll continue to pay for it in beer. He'll be reminded every Friday.
It's the worst possible timing to have a baby. Well, two babies at the middle of vintage.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Grant Edmonds, Rachel Garnham, winemakers, Sileni, Hawke's Bay. We continue on. This is the end of this day. I'm going to move on. I'm heading for Marlborough. Tasting Room Radio, New Zealand.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who would like to announce that Black Swift Vineyards has opened The Nest. Their tasting room is open on a first-come, first-served basis, no booking required, currently accepting groups of up to 6 people in accordance with good response guidelines. They have a wonderful patio and a picnic area you can often find on site, Grumpy Chef, Little Tokyo Ramen, and their very own smoke show, smoked meats barbecue food truck on the site. BlackSwiftVineyards.com and TheHatchWines.com. And from all of the worker bees at The Hatch, have a safe and happy new year. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery. Naramata grown and raised. Unique, small lot, and terroir driven are terms best used to describe their wines. Led by veteran winemaker Kathy Malone. Just a word from our friends at Hillside Winery. They're closed Boxing Day. And here's the important part. They'll be open New Year's Eve from noon to 3 p.m. closed New Year's Day. Their tasting room is closed for the season. Seated sensory tastings will begin again in March 2021. HillsideWinery.ca. And from everyone at Hillside Winery, have a safe and happy New Year.
This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We are mid-journey, so to speak, halfway through our visit to New Zealand and its wineries and its regions and its sustainability. Someone has to be the first winery. Someone has to be the oldest winery. Someone has to be literally the first one to put vines in the ground, and I happen to be right there. Mission Estate Winery in Hawke's Bay is that place and that destination, and Paul Mooney is the winemaker. Paul, give us a picture of Mission Estate today. It's not that little winery anymore. It's a major operation.
This operation expanded onto a more commercial basis in the early to mid-1970s. And you could say in a sustainable way, because this winery has all been, the income from this winery has always been a part of the income mix. So it's always delivered a dividend, a modest dividend in the past, but now it's a substantial dividend to the Society of Mary, or the fathers who are still the sole shareholder of this operation.
His name's Paul Mooney. He's the winemaker, and he's very busy. Trust me, there's people waiting to talk to him because he's in the middle of harvest. Mission Estate Winery in Hawke's Bay, Paul Mooney, the winemaker. All of that aside, all that sustainability aside, does any of that actually play into the taste of the wine, the aromas of the wine, or is it a sidebar story?
How do you define sustainability? Yeah, we've been trying to get a handle on this, what this word sustainability, my take on sustainability is. Sustainability is all about optimizing your resources, optimizing the use of your resources.
So the wines that you put in, and this is Gimlet Gravels we're talking about. Yes. This is one of the great spots in the world. So the wines that are in front of me are what, Paul?
I've got two Merlots, and one's from a very, very low vigor part of the vineyard. And one's from the medium vigor part of it.
Explain low, medium vigor. In other words, it has to work harder?
Yeah. The vines are going to, on the low vigor, they really struggle. And they don't grow much of a, they don't grow many leaves.
But the rule of thumb has always been the harder a vine has to struggle, the better, perhaps the better the fruit is. Is that working here?
No, it's all about balance. It's all about balance. So you'll find that all the great vineyards in the world, the great wines are made in areas or in vineyards where you have very good vine balance.
And then actually balance turns out to be one of the key words in all of winemaking. That is, if you're going to make a wine, make it balanced, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The consumer who stands in front of the bottle a year and a half from now, do they give one whit? I mean, it's incredible that what goes into that bottle of wine. The thinking you do, the planning you do, your team, the day-to-day operations, And then you put it in the bottle, and 6 months later you put it on the shelf. What's the responsibility of the consumer to know a little bit about the wine? What do you think?
Well, it's our responsibility to communicate with the consumer, to communicate our story.
Tell them the story, right?
Tell them the story in a way that they can get, basically. And that's not very easy.
Okay, Paul, we'll talk when we get some wines in front of us. Thank you.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with Terry David Mulligan.
This is Tasting Room Radio in New Zealand. I'm no longer in the north. I'm on the South Island. And if I remember correctly, I got on a Dash 8 and I went from Hawke's Bay to Wellington. And then 20 minutes later, got on the same Dash 8 and ended up in Nelson. It's going to fall to Lars Jensen, who is the owner and sales director of Richmond Plains, and Steve Gill, who is the winemaker at Richmond Plains. But there's also Timania. There's two names we're going to run by you here. First of all, Lars, if you can, just describe for somebody, an audience that's never been in this part of the world, exactly where Nelson is.
Right, Nelson's at the top of the South Island. So if you can imagine, the South Island is 1,000 kilometres long, and there's a big bay at the very top, and we're at the base of that bay, surrounded by mountains running into the sea either side of us.
Tell me about the two labels.
Richmond Plains is my personal vineyard. And my business partner, John, he's the founder of Timania. So both pioneering vineyards here in Nelson, going for over 20 years now.
Tell me about the pioneering part. First in what race?
First, to commercially plant vines here in the plains for Timania, and Richmond Plains produced New Zealand's first organic and biodynamic Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir.
I asked you as we were walking what the reaction to it was. That was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah. Back then, I think, we were considered pretty crazy and fringe. And it's funny how things have turned. We're now organic and biodynamic wines leading the pack.
What influence did you have on the market when they saw your success? Did others follow?
I think there has been a lot of people following. I think as people realise that, hey, the wine's actually pretty good, and it just makes good sense because it's good farming. So our philosophy is, if you can make something that's good for you, and good for the planet, and tastes great, why not? It's just good farming.
Steve Gill is the winemaker. I know he's the winemaker because I can smell him from here. You've been inside machines messing around. It's harvest time. What's already come in?
Just picked some Pinot Noir for our Blanc de Noir and our Rosé.
You might not see it as pressure, but what pressure does it put on you to keep these organic standards, biodynamic standards?
It's quite easy, actually. It's just working with nature rather than trying to mess around with nature to sort of fit into the way that you want to work. So it's just a different way of thinking.
Lars, does it take a while for the vines to find ground zero, that sort of great spot where their roots should be? Does it take them a couple of years?
It definitely does. We're on, being on the river gravels here, they're very free draining, so we do have to irrigate. We carefully irrigate. We believe that good, healthy root system, you build this fantastic root structure reaching down several metres. So there's a whole inverse world down there full of microorganisms and beneficial bacteria and fungi. And so there's an amazing world down there. You want to treat it with respect and look after it. And the vines will find what they're looking for. If you don't feed them water-soluble fertilisers, it's like, you know, giving a junkie crack cocaine. And you probably end up with flabby grapes like the mayor of Toronto or something like that.
Whoa! All the way from Toronto, Rob Ford. Hey, he's doing two shows tonight. So Richmond Plains is the label, Lars Jensen, and the winemaker, Steve Gill, are talking to me. And we're in Nelson. So the north end of the South Island, the town is Nelson. It's a great town. Even though I haven't seen it, I've heard a lot about it. Sustainability, gents. What is the program here and how long has it been in place, Steve?
Well, we've been organic from the start, which is as sustainable as you can get.
I'd like to think for us personally, we've shown that you can make good wine that's also organic, and it's good for the planet. So since we've started, there's at least possibly a third, if not more, of the other local wineries have adopted organic biodynamic practices. There's an increasing number certified. We used to fly solar here in the region for over a decade, but since then there's probably at least half a dozen now certified, and more on the way. So pretty soon half the region will be certified or in certification, I hope.
So if you live in British Columbia and it's currently not available in British Columbia, how can this audience get a hold of your wines?
The best thing is to either just email us. You can Google richmondplains.co.nz or Temania, spelt T-E-M-A-N-I-A.co.nz. And I can put you in touch with our importers, or you can look up the importers themselves in Alberta.
Lars Jensen, who is the owner and sales director of Richmond Plains, and the winemaker of record, Steve Gill, at Richmond Plains and Temania, two wineries in one. There's one wine I got to ask you about because I noticed it on the website. It's Temani Big Balls, Syrah 2010. The story behind this must be intriguing. How did it happen?
This was in celebration of the Rugby World Cup in 2011 here in New Zealand. And so as part of that, we created the world's biggest rugby ball, only we did it from grapevines. So we sculpted it. It's about, wove all the canes together. It's six. It's a fantastic, so people can come here and see it at the cellar door. It's the Temania Big Ball Syrah. So we figured that some of the guys playing in this tournament are really going to need to get some big balls, really, or show their colours. Here in New Zealand. But the captain of the triumphant New Zealand All Black team got some, and the part of the tasting notes, as we suggested, it was an ideal accompaniment to roast springbok, barbecue, wallaby, coq au vin, or to wash down any old English puddings. So it works really well.
So, well, now the World Cup is come and gone. Are you still making and sending out big balls?
Well, we're still making big balls, but it's just the Temania Syrah at the moment. So it's the same wine, just a new label. So it's just the Temania Syrah, which people can buy in Canada.
Is this going to show up in Canada?
This is in Canada. It's in Alberta and could be available in BC.
Oh, so. Joy! What's the website?
It's temania.co.nz.
T-E-M-A-N-I-A. This is Tasting Room Radio in New Zealand, in Nelson. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery. Naramata grown and raised. Unique, small lot, and terroir driven are terms best used to describe their wines. Led by veteran winemaker Kathy Malone. Just a word from our friends at Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. They're closed Boxing Day. And here's the important part. They'll be open New Year's Eve from noon to 3 p.m. Closed New Year's Day. Their tasting room is closed for the season. Seated sensory tastings will begin again in March 2021. HillsideWinery.ca. And from everyone at Hillside Winery, have a safe and happy New Year. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. The Moon Cursor name pays tribute to the gold smuggling history of Osoyoos. The winery's focus has always been making premium wines from old world grape varieties like Tanat, Dolcetto, and Torrija Nacional. And for all of that hard work and dedication, Moon Cursor was recognized as the number one best performing small winery at the 2019 Wine Align National Wine Awards of Canada. You can find all of the details at mooncursor.com. And from Beta and Crestali at Moon Cursor and everyone there, Happy New Year. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We are in the midst of our New Zealand special, or specials. Mike Brown is the CEO of Kono Beverages, K-O-N-O Beverages, in Nelson, the northern tip of the South Island of New Zealand. This is not just any event, Mike. This is something very special, and it involves native culture, tradition, and food and wine.
Yeah, look, we're a really interesting company in that we're Māori-owned, so owned by the Indigenous people of New Zealand. And what's interesting about us is that we do a few different things with food and beverage. So we fish, we grow apples and pears and hops and kiwi fruit, and we make wine. So we do a few different things with the land and the sea.
But it all starts with, and something I recognize right away, and that is we're going into Maori territory, so there will be a ceremony, much like I might see on the west coast of Canada. What do I expect when I step in?
So Maori, like the First Nation people, there's a great emphasis on protocol, welcoming people properly, what we call manaakitanga, so hospitality. So it's quite a strict procedure. If you're going on to Marae, the meeting place for Maori for the first time, you need to be welcomed on. There's some speech making, some songs need to be sung, and it's quite a formal process. But at the end of it, you're one of us, you're one of our friends.
And in order to honor the ceremony, I'm going to put this recorder away so there'll be no on-site sounds. Apparently, Corinne, I'm going to be talking to Corinne.
So Corinza, our company lawyer, she's not only a former law professor, but she's got a very top-class business brain as well, and very much in tune with the culture and the history, why we're here, and what we're going to do with our legacy.
All right, we're off to talk to Corinne, and be welcome on Maori. This is Tasting Room Radio, the South Island, just outside of Nelson. Corinza Johnson is with the Kono Company in New Zealand. Tell me about this region. Is it traditionally, are these traditional lands?
Yeah, so where we are today, this is called Te Awhina Marae, and it's a traditional occupation site or occupation lands of the people who are from this place. So those people are from the families of two tribes, Ngāti Rārua and Te Atiawa.
Two tribes together?
Two tribes that settled this area and continue to have what we call customary ownership of this area today. So it's Ngāti Rārua and Te Atiawa together. So those two tribes came from the North Island, along with two other tribes who live in the wider Nelson area. That's Ngāti Tama and Ngāti Kōata. So those are the traditional owners of this place.
And speaking of tradition, what were the traditional skills of these tribes? They would have been fishermen.
Fishermen, gardeners, hunters, fighters. So it was an invasion, essentially, into the top of the South Island that led to settlement in this area.
Talking Maori traditions, customs and wine with Corinza Johnson, the company secretary for Kono New Zealand. What kind of winemakers are you?
We're excellent winemakers. I hope you get to try some while you're here. Have you tried any yet?
No, but I'm about to. How did it all start?
It started with a vision of our owners who wanted to use our land effectively so that we could support ourselves. So when we talk about sustainability, or our word for it in Māori is kaitiakitanga, which means to care for or to look after the land. And there's two parts to that. There's the nurturing the land, but there's also the right to have a sustainable existence from that land. So in modern times, that doesn't necessarily just mean we grow things that we eat. It means we grow things that we can produce, that we can sell in our export markets and make money to sustain our families. So it was a desire to use the land effectively. And if you're from the Nelson region, some of the best wine in the world, wine growing country in the world. So that's how it started, really, with that vision from our owners to properly utilise that land.
Corinza Johnson is with the Kono Company in New Zealand. Are you sustainable in terms of your aquaculture?
Well, mussel and oyster farming, we like to think, is one of the most sustainable activities you can do in terms of its intensity on the water. You know, it's something that we've always done, you know, harvested from the sea. So we like to think so. But there's all sorts of other sustainability initiatives. One of them is we have a native hawk or falcon that used to fly from one side of the South Island to the other, to the Abel Tasman Park, which is this way, west. So we've been building native structures and trees back into our vineyards to support that bird's flight path, in the hope that we will be able to encourage it to fly back along its traditional route. So there are all sorts of initiatives happening to promote sustainability.
Do you have a website?
Of course we do. So it's if you Google Tohu Wine, it's T-O-H-U, or Kono, K-O-N-O, tohu.co.nz.
She is Corinza Johnson, and she is the company secretary and the lawyer for Kono, New Zealand. Right, thank you to Corinne. We're back in the car, and we're on the clock. I know that for a fact because Mike Brown continues to look at his clock and realize that we are still in arrears, so to speak. Mike is the CEO of Kono Beverages, K-O-N-O. It's a large industry, Maori-driven, quite a team effort here. So apparently we're heading out on the water.
Yeah, so we're going to head to Havelock, which is a little port between Nelson and Blenheim. And it's the port that we farm our mussels out of. So each day the mussel boats will go out and harvest green-lipped mussels, so the famous mussels from New Zealand. So we're going to go out on one of the boats and pull up some mussels and have them with some Tohu Sauvignon Blanc. We're going to taste some Sauvignon, some Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir from that vineyard, and then we'll taste some Tohu wines from our Awatere vineyard, which is in Marlborough. Both brands are single vineyard, so the wines are only made from the one vineyard. They're not blended from lots of different vineyards. Very, very particular to the sites.
And that name again was T-O-H-U?
T-O-H-U, Tohu. So that's a word meaning sign or signature.
And the reason there is a reason why I spelled both of those for you, because they are coming our way. So we're going to go out on board the vessel, go out and taste some mussels, and do some tasting at the same time. Here we go. Please tell me your name.
Dean Higgins.
What's the name of your vessel?
This vessel is the Hikapu Hunter. It's our sourcing vessel for Connell Seafoods.
What are we sourcing today?
Today we are sourcing green-lipped mussels, checking their condition and seeing if they're ready for harvesting at our processing plant.
And what's our body of water? Where are we exactly?
We are in the Kenepuru Sound, which is a side sound to the main Pelorus Sound, which is in the Marlborough Sounds.
But if somewhere we're looking at a map of New Zealand,
yeah.
Top left-hand corner, where are we? Top of South Island?
Yep, that's right. Top right-hand corner of the South Island.
Very good.
Yeah.
This is obviously a very bountiful place. You farm a lot of mussel?
Yes, we grow around 12,000 tonnes a year for our processing plant. We're actually one of the smaller players. There's two other much bigger companies than ours growing around 40 to 50,000 tonnes between them. So it's a very big industry in this region.
And these mussels go all over the world?
Yes, all over the world. 90% would be export market and probably 10% domestic in the New Zealand itself. It's all about crop management and farm management to hit the cycles correctly.
You're a farmer.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like farming on land, except you're in the water.
Now, what is then the perfect wine to wash down that mussel raw?
The Konu wine? Tohu? Is the best wine.
Sauv Blanc?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. The Moon Cursor name pays tribute to the gold smuggling history of Osoyoos. The winery's focus has always been making premium wines from old world grape varieties like Tanat, Dolcetto, and Torrija Nacional. And for all of that hard work and dedication, Moon Cursor was recognized as the number one best performing small winery at the 2019 Wine Align National Wine Awards of Canada. Not only do they have a great wine club, but also think about giving a wine club membership as a great Christmas gift. You can find all of the details at mooncursor.com. And from Beta and Chris Tolley at Moon Cursor and everyone there, Happy New Year.